Good morning. I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development Committee to order. A few minutes late. Traffic and dogs are causing problems. Members, we have the minutes from March 19th. Representative Robbins, I believe you have looked at them thoroughly, haven't you? Have you not?
I have. I moved the minutes.
Thank you. Any corrections or additions? Seeing none. All those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you. We now have those opposed, same sign. We now have minutes. First on the agenda today. Oh, wait a minute. Before I get to one. So we have five bills up. We have an hour and a half. I want everyone to understand that we have a whole lot of bills to get through this week and next. I'm known for being a bit short on occasions. I might be shorter in the next week or two. So brevity in testimony is appreciated. And if it's not appreciated, it will be forced. So, with that, Representative Knorr, would you like to move your bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 1693 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. House File 1693 is funding for further project, which is part of Goodwill Istasil. This program was initiated in 1999 to provide economic and emotional support so that fathers can provide get unemployment and support their families and children. So also this addresses the challenges that fathers, the barriers that they face if they've got hardship to employment, challenges that they face, legal process, to make sure that they can find a footing. With me, I have got a testifier who will walk us through the program, what they do in further project at Goodwill.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Michael Worth Davis. I'm the president and CEO of Goodwill Istasils in Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Knorr, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak about our work to stabilize and empower fathers with the workforce development and parenting skills needed to help their children, their families, and our communities thrive. As a leader in employment services for 100 years, Goodwill Istasils provides customized services to eliminate barriers to work and independence. We have been intentionally serving dads with a powerful combination of workforce development and parenting services through our Father Project for the past 17 years. 7 years ago, we received a highly competitive federal Responsible Fatherhood Grant to expand our programs across the state from the Twin Cities into Park Rapids, St. Cloud, and Rochester. Together with our partners, Family Services Rochester and St. Joseph's Health in Park Rapids, we have served nearly 2,000 men across all locations. In each community, we have forged strong partnerships with local employers, as well as child support, legal, and other service agencies to create solutions and successes in helping low-income fathers support their children financially and connect with them emotionally. These connections are critically important as we assist dads in engaging in the workforce and stabilizing their finances so they can re-engage in the lives of their children. Our experience is that many non-custodial fathers want to be involved in the lives of their children, but need to develop the tools and connect with support systems to be successful in doing so. The dads that come to the Father Project are not deadbeat dads, but dead broke dads. Our goal is to help dads get jobs, train for better jobs, and move into careers as they become productive, positive workers and parents. Excuse me. The program works, and we have the data to support it. A return on investment study by the Wilder Foundation showed a long-term financial return of $3.41 for each dollar invested in the Father Project. Evaluation outcomes have shown increased wages, increased child support payments, and increased parenting skills, some of the program's most significant economic impacts on families. Over the past 18 months, we have enrolled 347 dads into the program across all locations. Of these, 45% had a criminal record, and 65% were unemployed or underemployed when they enrolled. As you can see from the program overview in your packet, we serve a diverse mix of individuals across the state, and our outcomes are strong. With over 2 months remaining on the current project, we have already met and exceeded our goals. 156 fathers have been placed in employment with an average starting wage of $13.65 an hour. Over 125 dads have completed the intensive 12-week parenting group, and many more still in progress. Many have increased contact with their children. Clearly, the goals remain great. That is why we are requesting an increase in our previous appropriation. With $1 million per year, we can significantly strengthen the efforts and expand the number of families served in Minnesota. The state's support of the Father Project over the past 2 years has been an essential part of continuing to serve more dads and their kids. Further state investment will help us continue to impact fathers and their families across Minnesota. With state funding support, we can serve 450 more fathers and help them stabilize employment. Thank you for this opportunity to highlight the importance of supporting fathers across Minnesota. We hope you will strongly advocate for the inclusion of funding for fatherhood and programming in the jobs finance bill. We'll be happy to answer any questions you may have, but first, please let me introduce one of our community partners in this important work, Sidney Fry II.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning. Grateful to be here with you on today. My name is Sidney Fry. I work for a nonprofit in Rochester, Minnesota, named Family Service Rochester. I have the privilege of serving as the program supervisor for Father Project site in Rochester within our community. Father Project in Rochester not only serves fathers within one of Minnesota's largest cities, but also within the surrounding communities throughout Olmsted County. As the city of Rochester continues to grow and diversify, so does too our growing awareness of a service gap that exists for fathers, especially those that have limited resources. Thanks in large part to the funding provided to this project, our Father Project site has been able to make significant strides in closing that service gap and providing ongoing case management services along with career development services and parenting education opportunities for over 50 fathers. Following a proven blueprint for highly effective family engagement outlined by our Goodwill Easter Seals partners, the Father Project in Rochester has been able to implement a service delivery model that provides fathers with increased access to employment services, parenting resources, and also connection to numerous community supports. We've already started to see in our short time how critical this work is and how it is so much more than just a project. We truly believe that this is a pathway that leads to employment and economic stability for fathers. While 90% of the fathers that we serve that come through our front door are facing significant barriers to employment, such as mental illness, chemical dependency, and criminal backgrounds, this project has been able to assist nearly half of all of our participants in getting jobs or advancing in their current positions. This is really not just a project. This is a pathway, one that leads to more fully invested fathers and more fully supported kids. Nearly a third of fathers served through this project have already worked toward and successfully achieved increased parenting time with their children, and we only anticipate this number to continue to grow. So what are the implications of all of this? This is a question I believe that we must ask those within our community that have the most at stake. Not our fathers, but our children. I would dare not speak on behalf of 31 children within our community who have, over the last year or so, been able to benefit from increased financial stability due to increased child support payments made by Father Project participants within Rochester. But I do briefly want to speak on behalf of one of those individuals. I'll refer to her as Rodney's little girl. Rodney himself had spent the better part of his adult life struggling with the disease of addiction. He hadn't seen his little girl in many years and perhaps wondered if she even remembered who he was. Last year, he started to attend our parenting groups while he was still in treatment, he subsequently graduated from our parenting group. He also graduated from treatment. He obtained full-time employment, and when he got his first paycheck, he did something that he had never done before. He actually started making child support payments. And the thing that would happen next, I can't really find a better word to describe it than amazing, because Rodney finally got a long-awaited second chance to be involved in his child's life. And I believe if she was here with us on today, she would want you to know how over the moon she is that she has finally gotten the opportunity to meet and to get to know her father. So when I say that this is not just a project, I mean that this is a passion of mine personally. It's also a proven intervention with proven outcomes, not only for fathers, but more importantly for the children within our communities and our community at large. So with that being said, I would like to introduce you to my friend, Thierre. Thank you.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Thierre Caldwell. I'm a member of the Power People Leadership Institute. My job is actually an employment coordinator, and I work with helping felons actually achieve employment. I came to the Father's Project broken because the only thing that gave me life, which was my son, was kind of being taken from me through parental alienation. With a criminal record, that kind of was a strike against me, and I faced a lot of barriers. I was facing employment discrimination. I was actually facing discrimination from my son's mother, and I kind of felt powerless. I didn't know what to do. And the Father's Project greeted me with open arms. I didn't come to the Father's Project full of energy and just like so happy. I came broken, as many fathers do. I met my biological father twice my whole life, and I'm 36 years old. And that's kind of what led me to the street. And I kind of vowed to never let that happen to my son and kind of break that generational curse. You know, the Father's Project helped me with education. They helped me with aligning, with finding out what I wanted to do with a career to help me kind of be a positive force in my son's life. And without the Father's Project, I really don't know what I would have did, because I didn't know where else to turn. The Father's Project did not discriminate against me because I had a criminal past. And then I was also able to, my son was actually able to see me win Father of the Year last year. And that was probably one of the best days of my life. And now it's interesting that I, who struggled once with because I had a conviction in my background, now my job is to help people with convictions in their background find employment. And, you know, the Father's Project helped me with all of that. And I can't explain to you how indebted I am. They came to every court date of mine for, the Father's Project was like family. And there's so many fathers that suffer silently with this problem, with not knowing their rights and not knowing who to turn to. And I just want to say that without the Father's Project, I really don't know where I would have been and how I could have helped my son. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
This isn't a backward question. Oh, yeah. I think you need to stay there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And congratulations. You know, you made a determination and you worked through that with support, and that's great to hear. So congratulations. And I don't know if it's maybe more for the author. I see that we're doubling the appropriation, and I know that what I see is that it's more focused in four communities. Is there expansion into other communities? Because it does sound like it's, from the information here, it's working well. We in government likes to support things that are working well and support families, and That is great to hear. Is that increase for going into other communities? Could you address that? And thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, Andrew will give a briefing on that issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Andrew Freeberg. I'm Director of Community Programs for Goodwill Easter Seals, and I've worked with the Father Project since 2001. The funds would support the expansion and strengthening of the Father Project model in the existing communities, which needs to go deeper and develop to engage more partners, and would also help us explore needs and strength and interest assessment in new communities to engage those communities in the Father Project efforts.
Representative Backer.
Chair, one more question. So, and it sounds like you guys do a lot of different services, but what would you say would be some of the top services that you guys do when a father comes and says, hey, can you help me out? I mean, what would be the three top services that you really focus on? Thank you.
Yes, that is a great question. And, you know, the first service, and I think Tier and Sydney both alluded to that, is that coming to a place that understands and listens to the unique needs of fathers and has expertise of engaging fathers in that change process. There's a lot of systems in Minnesota and across the country that serve and engage families, but have not necessarily had success engaging fathers in those existing services. So number one is listening. And then number two and three, in whatever order, are workforce development services to help fathers get in a financially stable position to support themselves and their child, and then parenting services, which again go hand in hand with providing not only that stability but ongoing motivation to support themselves and their family.
Thank you. Representative Dabney?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I've long been a fan of the Father Project. At least their Minneapolis location is in my legislative district, and I've had some contact. But I'm interested, Dr. Worth Davis said that the return was $3.41 for each dollar invested, and I don't know which of you could handle it, but help me understand. Clearly some of that is the GED services, the job training and job placement services, but I think I also see with this effort kind of a two-generation approach with the value of reconnecting the father with his child or children. Whether that's the monetary value of getting him right with the child support or the social and emotional value of reconnecting him. Can you pull apart that $3.41 a bit?
Who wants to handle that question?
My apologies. Mm-hmm.
Yep,
no, I'm just hurrying people along here.
And I'll try to hold it to one question in that effort.
Yep, I think you were right on target with the financial impacts being returning to work and the long-term economic impact on family when that work can turn into education, training, and career pathway. The secondary impacts on children are very difficult to measure, especially for non-custodial fathers who are re-engaging with their child, because there are many other impacts on the child. But I think the long-term impacts really regarding family stability, the father's ongoing long-term engagement with the family and support of the child are incredibly important economic long-term measures.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have one question for the last testifiers. Caldwell? Did I get that correct? Mm-hmm. So now that you get to spend time with your son, mm-hmm. What's your favorite activity with your son? As a single father myself, I have my memories. I'm just asking yours.
Honestly, it would probably be, he likes to make slime.
Cool.
I mean, and we make little YouTube videos, and he wants to be a scientist when he grows up. So, it's making slime.
I like it. Mine and my daughter's was the walk to the Häagen-Dazs store.
Yeah, exactly.
Representative Noor, would you care? Representative Kosnick, I am cutting this off. We are over time. Representative Noor, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion for House File 1693 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Members, we have 15 minutes per bill. Anything more than that is going to get cut off. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll move your bill for possible 1505 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few testifiers. We'll come down and we'll try to be really, really succinct so that we cover what we need to, and you will all have the opportunity to ask the questions that you have. This bill is really somewhat of a simple bill. It increases what had been previous allotments to help fund an incredibly successful program, which is housed in my district, called Summit Academy OIC. So I am not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about it because I'm not the expert, but the gentleman to my right, Lewis King, is. So I will have him begin letting you know about the program and the work they do.
Please identify yourself for the tape. Proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lewis King, President and CEO of Summit Academy OIC, located at 935 Olson Memorial Highway. We do one thing, train people and put them to work. We believe the best social service program in the world is a job. We offer 20-week training programs at no out-of-pocket costs to the people who enroll in our training. We are involved in health care, construction, and newly found IT. We've completed our first cohort and have now started the second. Next year we will go to five cohorts. We were involved in the construction of all major projects in the Twin Cities, and we believe in putting the people in good union paying jobs to keep our economy strong. A couple of years ago we added a contextualized GED program, and I'm very proud to say that we have an 85% passage rate for our folks. The national average is 80%. We've now eclipsed over 160 GEDs. People spend 10 weeks in that program coming to school every day rather than open entry, single focus deal where you just come in when you get ready to. They get immersed in our culture, and then they get to pick their passion and move on to vocational training. In total, our average placement wages are $17 an hour for IT plus benefits. Health care is at $15.52, and I brought one of our community health worker students to testify this morning, and $16.87 in the construction arena. A longitudinal study determined that 82% of our people were still employed after 3 years of completion, and 90% of our people are hired in their field of study. 73% are 200% below the federal poverty guidelines. That's about $22,000 a year. And 53% live below the federal poverty guidelines, which is $12,000 a year. We're very excited about the expansion of our IT program. We have a partner in Atomic Data, which allowed us to pilot two courses. We started 26 people. They hired 15 of them, and we are now in the second cohort with a waiting list for the third. The IT industry, as the new Commissioner of Deed has pointed out, is exploding. And if we want to deal with disparities in our community, this holds promise to put folks in with very little, with short-term training, not four-year degrees, and they can go on to get certificates and other designations that allow them to earn up to $53,000 within a couple of years.
And we have another testifier who'd like to speak a little bit about her experience. Thank you.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Nazra Badul, and I'm a community health worker. I graduated from Summit in 2018. Prior to coming to Summit, I was struggling to go back to school and finish my associate's degree, and I was in between jobs, working long hours for not a whole lot of pay. And since I came to Summit, My life has completely changed. I found that the program was something that I could handle. The classes really got me ready for what life would be like and my career would be like when I graduated. So now I am a community health worker with an organization that we serve low socioeconomic children in the dental field and help them find access to oral health care. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Having witnessed one of the opening classes and Mr. King's initial comments to the opening class, did you like his gentle manner?
Mr. King always said that his saying is the best social service program in the world is a job, and I 100% agree with that. And he's always inspired me since the first time I've met him. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've actually had the privilege to work with some of OIC students in my previous job at Community Action. We had a couple interns in the community health program that actually worked with one of our folks in the Head Start program exactly on dental care and getting access to dental care. So not only are you training people to go out into the workforce, but then they're also coming in and helping their communities as well. And so I think that's just such a great program, and I really appreciate it.
Did not see a question in there. So I will put a question in. You have two bills in, if I remember correctly. This one, and you have a request for funding for computer hardware and to put together or to expand your IT, is that correct? So this is separate from that bill?
Mr. Chair, we only have one matter before the legislature at this time.
Thank you.
This is it.
Representative Robbins.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been a big fan of your work for many years. I have been involved with the Banyan community and have watched your work as well, and I just can't say enough about the great things you do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Representative North.
Good morning, and I've always looked into OIC's program because we've always referred using through Abdulzak Bihi. If you could explain the contextualized GED, because some people may not understand what that really means.
Representative Mr. King.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Representative Noor, I was just also reminded in my earpiece that we do have a post-secondary enrollment option bill to restore our status as a PSEO provider. As it turned out, we switched accrediting bodies, so it's pretty administrative. It had nothing to do with performance. And your question was on the contextualized GED. We found out there are 70,000 people in Hennepin County without a GED. I believe the population of Brooklyn Park is 78,000. There are 20,000 African Americans, and to put that in context, there are 22,000 people, men, women, and children, in Golden Valley. So clearly, for all the wonderful things that are being done, more needed to be done. We researched and found a model in LaGuardia out in New York that instead of the open entry where a student can come in on their own at any time and just pursue it in their own manner, the more effective way of getting the job done was to host the GED program in an educational institution and attach it to a career field. So people who come into our GED program are asked, what do you want to do after you get your GED? Go into construction, healthcare, or IT. We also found a fourth person that we had not anticipated. And that's the person that's working out there right now at the Quick Trip who doesn't have a high school diploma or GED and cannot get promoted because of it. And so those people, too, we're finding to be a large portion of the program. The advantage of the contextualized program is that they can see their next step right in front of them. They're part of our culture every day. And because of the rigor of the program, they become very good at test-taking, studying. We put in a boot camp to help them get up to speed. And now we're finding that some of them don't have time, can't get it done in 10 weeks. We're adding an additional component to the program so that we can deal with those folks too. So it represents an opportunity for them to gain tremendous support while they get that needed credential to enter into the workplace at a decent wage.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions. Oh, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. King, good to see you again. The thing that I have noticed over the years that I have dealt with your program is it's so flexible, and you make changes for a very positive way to include even more people in more fields. And I think this is something that goes to your credit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther. The advantage of the 20-week community-based training program is that we can respond within 12 months to immediate community needs. For example, in the instance of the Atomic Data IT Partnership, they approached us in November of 2017, and the first class enrolled in August of 2018 and graduated by the end of the year. And we kept rolling. We have a talented team of people who get at a problem, figure out should we do it or not, and then once we make the decision, we go forward.
Are there any other testifiers? Are there any other questions? Seems like you've got a pretty good gig going here. So I will renew my motion to lay over House File 1505 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. There's no need for a vote. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it. And your brevity was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
What's the next one? Representative Christensen with House File 1168.
Welcome. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Your bill. I'll move House File 1168 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, so moved. Good morning, members. And thank you for having me today to talk about this bill. 180 Degrees was established in 1971 and opened the doors of their first halfway house in 1973. Today, upwards of 1,000 youth and adults are served every year, and 80% of the organizational services focus on keeping youth out of the criminal justice system as adults. 75% are people of color, and almost all clients are low income. HF 1168 appropriates $200,000 in 20 and 21 from the Workplace Development Fund for a grant to 180 Degrees to expand job readiness training for three new populations: young adults in group homes, sexually exploited girls at Brittany's Place, and men who have recently been released from prison at Clifton Place. For further description of the goals and objectives of the program, I would like to introduce Janet Holloway, the Advancement Director at 180 Degrees.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Janet Holloway. I am the Advancement Director for 180 Degrees. We're a nonprofit organization which provides shelter and supportive services for homeless youth, sexually exploited youth, and former convicts. We also provide an innovative job training program, which our program supervisor, Andrew Hudson, will describe. 180 Degrees was established in 1971. Our first program was started by Robbie Robinson, a man who spent 20 years in and out of the criminal justice system. Robbie opened our halfway house in Minneapolis to help men rebuild their lives after incarceration. 45 years later, we continue to help men establish stable living and connections to the community. Today, 180 Degrees provides a wide range of support programs for youth, adults, and families who face barriers that are personal, societal, and financial. Our key initiatives include providing emergency shelter and trauma-informed care, advocating for kids and families, helping people finish high school, moving youth and adults to safe and stable housing, and developing crucial life and job skills through our youth vocational program known as YoVo Pro. We support individuals and families at critical junctures in their lives, which may result from external factors like experiencing abuse or violence, or may result from past actions like experiencing incarceration as a result of criminal activity. We intervene during major episodes in our clients' lives, offering structure and support so clients can build a new roadmap to personal success and avert negative outcomes. Today, over 1,000 youth and adults are served by 180 Degrees programs each year. 80% of our services focus on keeping youth out of the criminal justice system as adults. 75% of our clients are people of color, and almost all are low income. We provide service to people in the Minnesota metropolitan area, as well as outstate, in particular Olmsted, Stearns, and Benton counties, where three of our programs are located. And now I'd like to introduce Andrell.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andre Hudson. I am the program supervisor at 180 Degrees. I supervise our YoVo Pro program. Our YoVo Pro program is a 9-hour instructional course, provides individualized job exploration counseling and workplace readiness training for high-risk youth with disabilities. The curriculum focuses on self-preparation, career planning, resume development, job search and application techniques, the interview process, course professional correspondence, how to dress for success, and the practice of interview process through mock interview views and role play. And the importance of the four C's, which is communication, collaboration, critical thinking, and creativity. YoVo Pro provides a job readiness training in area high schools for high-risk youth addressing employment and training disparities. These students face challenges due to poverty, learning disabilities, and racial inequity, and have been unable to be successful in the traditional high school setting. Job coaches provide introductions and connections for clients to local businesses, which is a critical component to our YoVo Pro program. When clients complete our curriculum, we remain engaged with them to help support their efforts to obtain and maintain employment. YoVo Pro provides educationally disadvantaged clients access to the workforce and offers opportunities to compete for any job that they qualify for that will jumpstart their careers in the field of their interests. In the past 2 years, YoVo Pro has had a number of successes. 11 classroom training cohorts have been completed, 178 students begin the program, and of the 178 students, 121 attained completion certificates of the program. And that of the 121, 63% obtained employment. Due to these successes in St. Paul, we are expanding into Hennepin and Carver counties. Over the current school year, we anticipate serving 20 to 25 different schools across the metro. In Ramsey County, Hennepin County, and Carver counties, and some of these schools will have two class cohorts, one in the fall and one in the spring. 180 Degrees is seeking funds to expand our job readiness training program to our young adults in our group homes, this to our sexually exploited girls at Britney Space, and to the men who have recently been released from prison at Clifton's residence. I have brought one of our students who has joined the program, completed the program, and is transitioning into from entry-level jobs to learning a trade. So he'll talk about that.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Hi, my name is Bashir Hassan. I live in St. Paul, and I go to Highland Park Senior High School. I like YovoPro because I learn more about job skills, careers, and how to answer interview questions properly. YovoPro taught me to apply for job interviews and create my resume, as well as how to communicate with my managers and supervisors with respect and courage to better help our company. Because of YovoPro, I got a job at Walmart as a cashier. My goal is to enroll into finishing Trades Institute to pursue a career as a commercial painter. I hope you will fund YovoPro so that other students like me can have a chance to use their job skills in the workplace. Thank you.
I'm just teasing the painter over here. I'm sure he's got a question for you. But thank you. Thank you. Good luck with your career choice. And, you know, the walls are always got to be painted. Just ask my wife. Actually, it's me. I'm getting a little antsy at it. Are there any other testifiers?
No.
Are there any questions? Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. I see some muffins behind me, so I know where my priorities are. But I do want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward and not superly identified or highlighted here is the importance of trafficked and sexually abused youth, and I think that's an important part of this that I'm happy to support. We did some work on a bill last year that recognizes that challenge in our society, and I appreciate that you're bringing this forward and happy to be on the bill for that.
I have one question for the – I don't know who should probably take this, but you have a nine-hour course, you say. Is that spread out over 2 weeks, 6 months, and is it an hour – if it's done in high schools, is it like an hourly class?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the 9 hours is very flexible. So it's depending on the school's schedule. It's usually an hour class, and depending if they want us to be in the classroom three times a week, that'll be equivalent to 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on the availability of the class and how often they want us in the school.
Who is they?
The staff at the school, so special ed teachers, general ed teachers, principal.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion to move House File 1168 for possible inclusion, lay over House File 1168 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This is a great program, so I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Next is Representative Leppard. House File 1464. I will, as soon as I'm ready. Oh. Up on the wrong side of the bed today. Be careful. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
I would like to move House File 1464 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please proceed with your, I'm sure you've got a great story to tell, and then some great testifiers. Please.
Indeed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, it's my pleasure to be able to present House File 1464. This is the Opportunity Reboot Bill. Colleagues from around the state, Representative Wolgamott, Olson, and Schultz, also join me in supporting this bill because it makes a difference in the communities that we serve. The purpose of this legislation is to sustain and possibly expand a group of successful programs around the state that are helping Minnesota close the economic achievement gap and address the workforce shortage crisis, too. As you can see in the materials included with the bill. There's an impressive number of coalitions and communities like Northfield, Red Wing, Faribault, Duluth, Sauk Rapids, and the Twin Cities, which are educating, training, and employing our youth who have some of the biggest obstacles as they face moving towards a successful and vibrant life. Mr. Chair, to give you a little more detail on the bill, I have several program directors and a student here as well to testify on the bill. And the first testifier is Dr. Rose Hsu.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yourself for the tape.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Rose Hsu, and good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And long time no see, Representative Mahoney. My name is Rose Hsu. I'm the Training and Technical Assistant Consultant for Opportunity Reboot. I'm here today in support of HF 1464, which provides funding appropriation for Opportunity Reboot. And thank you, Representative Lippert, for authoring the bill. This bill provides critical support for this initiative, which is a career pathway initiative launched in 2015 by Youth Prize in collaboration with Search Institute, Mentor Minnesota, and DEED. And some of my colleagues are here today. Youth Prize actually have made an initial funding, private funding of $3 million to launch this program, and more resources are needed to continue and expand this program. We had a very competitive process to select a group of cohorts, sub-grantees, and some of the youth from that program and program directors are here today too. And hopefully you'll hear from them. As a technical support consultant, I provide the sub-grantees with in-person training, bi-weekly calls, and program site visits. And I also serve as a liaison to Mentor Minnesota, to Search Institute, to DEED, in order to make sure that we have the access for great training for our sub-grantees. And this program really is focusing on helping our young people who are disconnected from life sometimes, disconnected from work, disconnected from education, and really bring them access and opportunities to dream again so that they can really see themselves being a contributing a member of the society. And for me, this program really speaks to the heart of why sometimes our system isn't working for them and what can we do to reinvest in them so that they can be successful again. So we know that this program has been successful. We have reached over 1,200 youth, and 300 of them has gotten credentials in IT, in construction, in manufacturing, so that they actually have some credentials along with their educational programming needs. So I know that this program is making a difference, and we hope that we can really support this bill and include it in the omnibus bill, and that we know that this is a population sometimes overlooked because they are a little bit older, and that we hope that we can continue to invest in them. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next is Rodrigo Ortiz is here to share a bit of his story as well.
Yeah, you want to sit and we'll rotate.
Good morning. My name is Rodrigo Ortiz. I'm in 10th grade at Northfield High School, and after school I work at Just Food Co-op, a local organic store. I've been involved with TORCH since 6th grade. TORCH stands for Tackling Obstacles and Raising College Hopes, and the staff have given me homework help and helped me learn about college and helped me think about what I want to do after high school. TORCH is the Northfield project in the Tri-City Bridges to the Future program. Since 9th grade, I've been able to take advantage of more career exploration and support services like scholarships provided for driver's ed, education, and behind the wheel, as well as transportation support when my bike broke. My dad wasn't able to help me out, and my mom doesn't live here. My brother also works and had to buy his own car to get back and forth to school and work. The scholarships really helped me out in my life with support from TORCH. I also learned about being organized and managing the stress of high school and working. I was able to complete both the classroom phase and behind-the-wheel training, and I am scheduled to take my driver's test at the end of the next month. It's been hard to grow up without a lot of money. I do think it has helped me learn to be responsible and more mature. I have needed to find my own path in life, and TORCH has been helpful along the way. They help me stay accountable by checking grades with me and giving me rides to where I need to go. They have helped me get to work on time and complete my employee review. It went well, and I got a raise. Last year, I accidentally broke my wrist doing back handsprings at the gymnastics center. I didn't know it was broken at first, but it was hurting for a week, and Tessa, the torch director, helped me make an appointment with a doctor. They took x-rays in Northfield and saw that it was broken. I was working as a bagger, and it took a lot of coordination to bag groceries with one hand. Tessa helped me figure out how to deal with the insurance and make more appointments with an orthopedic specialist. We couldn't get in to see an orthopedist in Northfield, so she ended up driving me to St. Paul at least four times. I remember that I needed three different casts. I had a blue one, a pink one, and a black one. Since then,
pink worked well.
Oh yeah. Since then, I got a promotion to a cashier at the co-op and gained more responsibility to help my manager close up, count the tills, and do more customer service. This year, I go to the torch room during my lunch hour to learn about opportunities for summer camps, tutoring, community service, and help me keep an eye on my grades. I still have 2 years left of high school, and after graduation, I'm thinking about joining the military or going to college. I've been interested in the military since third grade, specifically the Coast Guard. I know Torch will be there to help me throughout the application process and help me make a good decision. Torch has helped my brothers as well. My older brother has come to the Torch office for tutoring and attend college visits and summer programs to help him figure out what to do after he graduates this spring. Torch staff also helped me register for his driver's. Torch staff also helped him register for his driver's test and get him to and from the exam station in Faribault. It took a few tries, but he got his license this winter, which is important because he drives himself to work and drives both of us to school. We also get most of the groceries for the house. I like to have a healthy food on hand and try to get my brothers to eat healthier. But none of this is possible without being able to drive in Northfield. My little brother will be coming to the high school next year, and I hope that Torch will be here for him like they have been here for me.
Thank you, Rodrigo.
Thank you.
I invite Graham Hartley forward now.
Good morning. I'm Graham Hartley. I'm the Director of Programs with Migazee Communications in Minneapolis. Migazee is an educational nonprofit working to improve the academic and life success of American Indian young people ages 14 to 24 in the Twin Cities. Through our programs and the relationships we develop, we intend to change the life trajectories of our participants. As part of Opportunity Reboot, our Green Jobs Pathway focuses on career exploration through hands-on projects and experiential programming that help our participants identify pathways to opportunities that lead to careers in the green economy. Migazee's work in partnership with Youth Prize and our cohort of partner organizations from across the state have enabled us to develop a strong learning community through which we have shared knowledge with each other, resources with each other, all to improve programs for young people. The evaluation support through this project has helped us to demonstrate the progress that our young people have made, not only through the numbers of young people that we have trained and enabled to discover pathways to career opportunities, but in the sense of self-efficacy that our young people develop as they discover their futures. Through the support of Youth Prize and Opportunity Reboot, we look forward to sharing stories of our young people as they move toward successful futures.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I invite Nikki Patton on to come forward, too.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Nikki Patnod. Chairperson Mahoney, members of the committee, my name is Nikki Patnod, and I'm here today as a representative of Mentor Minnesota, the only statewide nonprofit serving a network of over 200 mentoring programs across the state. Our organization is a core partner of the Opportunity Reboot Initiative, and it's an honor to be here in support of House File 1464. I'd like to start today by sharing a story of a young woman I worked with named Christy. Christy was what we would define as an opportunity youth, a young person who was disconnected from traditional employment or education opportunities. Christy was aging out of long-term foster care, and I was working with her to kind of plan what she was going to do once she left the system. Part of that work included identifying who was in her circle or web of support. Who were the people she could go to if she needed advice or would be there for her in her time of need? She started writing down names of people and looked up at me and said, "There isn't a single person in my life that isn't paid to be there." Christy felt that she had no one in her web of support that was there because they wanted to be, only because they were paid to do so. As one of those paid adults in her life, my role changed to a mentoring relationship. It became my goal to model for her and to teach her the skills needed to make connections and build the relationship and social capital needed to build the network of support she wanted and needed. Christy's story isn't unique. In fact, 1 in 3 young people in the U.S. are growing up without a mentor. Research tells us that young people with mentors are more likely to succeed in school, become leaders in their communities, and be equipped with the tools they need to build a career. Think back to your first work experience. Whether it was good or bad, it left an impression on you. It's helped shape who you are as an employee or as a supervisor today. Your first manager, your second, your 30th, all of those people have been mentors to you. Through the Opportunity Reboot Initiative, Mentor Minnesota has trained nearly 300 opportunity youth, staff in the programs supporting them, and supervisors or employers on how to approach these relationships with a mentoring mindset. For many of the young people in this initiative, it will be their first foray into the job market. They may not understand the expectations of finding and keeping a job, pathways to careers, or how to thrive in a work culture developed by people who often do not look like them or come from similar backgrounds. These are things that we have had modeled for us or that we've learned from our own working experiences. At a time when many employers report difficulty finding and retaining talent, it is important that this work continues. By connecting more opportunity youth with additional supportive adults trained to utilize a mentoring mindset, we will remind youth that they matter, that their challenges in life do not define them but have prepared them, and that by leveraging their mentors, they can increase their opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Mahoney, there are two students who've also prepared to share their story if there's time.
I think you've got a couple 5 minutes, so
right.
Let's go for it.
Come on forward.
They've probably come a good distance, and they should be heard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Yashan. I just want to thank you to be in this program, because without this program, I would not have seen my future career. I don't know what I'm doing. And now I have learned more about job skill, and I know what I will do in the future. After I graduate, I want to join the Roofer Union job program. Thanks.
Wait. You wanted to join the what? Which program?
Roofer.
The roofers?
Yes.
Not a painter? Roofing's cold. Painters, you
Mr.
get the Chair, least, it's
Mr.
warm.
Chair, I'd like to speak to this testifier afterwards, straighten him up.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. And community member, thank you for having me today. I'm just going to talk about first time when I came to the United States. I first came in 2015, and I was looking for a school, for a high school, and I went to Leap High School, and I couldn't finish my high school because of the they have some process about different ages, so I was over 20, and they said I was not they was not sure about if I can finish high school, and so they told me that you cannot finish your high school, so you cannot be you're not going to be able to finish your high school. So we have no other offer for you. So I was looking and seeking for help, but I thank God that I find a place which is GAP. So they give me another opportunity and to finish my high school, and they teach us about how to be able to express ourselves and be ready to start a new life. And I went there, and now I'm starting in the IT pathway, and they gave me that opportunity to finish my high school and have a diploma, so I can be able to reach my goals, and which is to be a Navy. So I'm planning to join the Navy in the future. So I thank them for that.
And again, because I have really bad hearing, what's your goal at the end?
My goal is to join the Navy.
Join the Navy.
Yep.
All right. Well, it was good enough for John McCain, great American hero.
Fear me.
Thank you.
Couldn't resist. Representative Lippitt, are there any closing comments or any questions I should ask first? I don't see any on the list, but I will at least ask.
To close, I would point out that the Youth Prize program, Torch, has been credited as being a key partner in Northfield with helping raise the graduation rate of the immigrant community, the new American community in Northfield. And by significantly, I mean by about 40%. So in the partners I work with in Northfield, among them Torch, we think a lot about how we neutralize the obstacles that students are facing so that they can succeed. And Torch has been a key partner, brings in many volunteers to provide the support students need so they can move their way through to realize the goals that they might possibly achieve and then achieve them. And this sort of work is happening throughout the state with Youth Prize. And so this is money well spent, and I encourage support.
Representative Levitt, how many locations is this organization located in? How many areas?
Marcus Pope may be best able to answer that. 6 is the number I'm hearing. 7. Marcus, pay him another number.
Yeah.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Marcus Pope, Vice President of Youth Prize. Opportunity Reboot involves 6 sub-grantees across the state in Duluth, Sauk Rapids, Northfield area, which also includes Sauk Rapids and Red Wing, as well as the Twin Cities metro area.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I will renew my motion to lay House File 1464 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
And Representative Robbins.
Whoa. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
You're here. I'm still looking at the...
yes, this is my first bill before the committee, so...
All right. A freshman that really understands the weight of my having not had time for breakfast either this morning.
I recommend the peach amaretto, Mr. Chair.
Well, I recommend that you move your bill.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair and members, I move House File 2419 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So thank you for the opportunity to present. Oh, do you have to vote on that?
Pardon?
Was that sufficient, or do I have to wait for you to say something?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, members, I want to preface my remarks by saying that this is just a pilot project that I hope will turn into a larger idea that I hope to flesh out with more research and detail during the interim. This bill would provide a $50,000 grant for a pilot project that would require 100% matching money to develop broadband in a co-working site in an area of the state that is underserved or unserved currently by broadband. This bill brings together many of the key ideas we have discussed in committee and gives us the opportunity to try to pull together the different threads for a cohesive strategy that we could expand in other areas of the state. As we all know, there's a great worker shortage in the state, there's a digital gap, and this lack of technological infrastructure is inhibiting economic growth and business investment in areas that are underserved by broadband. There's also a network gap, a lack of connection, as we've heard from some of the testifiers today, where people don't have the same access to human capital and networks that can support their business development, and that's true in areas that are underserved by broadband and other areas of the state as well. So my original idea was in response to Chair Mahoney's frustration that we can't seem to attract angel investors outside the metro area. And I have learned much in preparing this bill, and my thinking has honestly changed as I've had conversations with people like Betsy and Representative Baker. So my hope is that this project will be a catalyst for future growth in addressing both the digital and the network gap around the state. The basic idea is that we can create a high-tech co-working space in a community that would be a place from which entrepreneurs and others can work much more productively than they could out of their home office, and that they would have access to technology tools that they would have if they lived in an area like the Twin Cities. If we wait for this for the federal broadband to reach all of the homes in Greater Minnesota, we will lose 10 years in terms of economic development in Greater Minnesota at least. So this would create a hub in communities where the technology exists for people to go work and create jobs and also bring jobs to Minnesota by getting them employment, as we will hear from the testifier, from all around the nation. They can find these jobs and work from anywhere. So it's more than telecommuting. It's about the technology hub in a community, and it's about the collaboration that happens. As these high-skilled, high-tech professionals come into these communities, then they help each other, as she will testify to in a moment. So I'd like to introduce my testifier. Her name is Betsy Bonema. She is the head and founder of a very innovative group in Wilmer called Work Up, and we're delighted to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Betsy Bonema. I'm the founder and owner of WorkUp, which is a co-working meeting space in Wilmer, Minnesota, on the Midwest Technology Campus. And I'm here today to really bring some visibility to the co-working culture and how it can serve outstate Minnesota. Our community is not a large metro area, but we've found that co-working has been a real asset to our community. WorkUp is about 4 years old as of May 1st, and before we even opened our doors, we took the concept to our community and got support from the Economic Development Commission and the Community College and some local businesses, because they really saw the vision of what we were trying to do, and that is to become a hub, a resource, a community that supports entrepreneurial thinking and activities and programming. And that was our commitment to those founding members, and that's what we're continuing to do today. I would say that through our programming and through our memberships, we've probably touched and been pretty involved with 60 different companies within our region. People come to our programming from probably at least 60 miles away, so we draw people to Wilmer. And I wanted to tell you a couple stories about our members and how they've actually been impacted by WorkUp, and I'll just give you a few cases. So one case would be, his name is Kyle Bjorkman. Before we even opened our doors, so it would have been 5 years ago or so, he came and toured the facility before it was remodeled. And by the way, we're in a 120-year-old building on the Midwest Technology Campus, which looks beautiful now, but at the time was a little rough. But his wife was looking to take a position at the hospital in our medical community, in a pretty high-level position, and he was a lead engineer at Polaris. And so he was considering leaving Polaris to start his own company, and he was considering moving to our area if he had the resources to start that company in the area so his wife could take this job and there was something for both of them. So he came to work his first few days at WorkUp. When we opened our doors, he didn't even have a business plan. So he was writing a business plan, and 4 years later, he now is in his third manufacturing facility and probably has about six employees right now and has launched a very successful product line in the recreational vehicle market. So he's one story. We're really, really proud of him. We also have a couple that came to our community because, again, the wife was hired as a pathologist in our medical community at the hospital. So it was a very high-level position. He works for Zipnosis, which is a startup in Minneapolis in their, I think, second or third round of funding. He was the third employee in a pretty significant startup right now. So he's got a lot of history and equity with the company, but he wanted to move to Willmar. So he did with his wife, and now he works out of workup a couple days a week, comes into the cities once or twice every couple weeks as well, and maintains his position with Zipnosis as the lead software developer, lead software engineer. And, you know, they're in their early 30s. They wanted to be in outstate Minnesota to start their family, but they were career people. And so we were able to provide that spouse opportunity that our community needed to bring the medical expertise that we needed as well. I have two more examples. Another one would be, her name's Jill. She's a safety engineer who works for a company right now out of Washington, used to be out of Seattle. She creates a lot of online content around safety for corporations, and so often she's in our space using our technology. So we have meeting rooms that have meeting technology, flat screen TVs, kind of the camera system to bring in people remotely. And, you know, you could be walking to one of our rooms and find her giving a webinar to 350 different people across the country from our space, because she can be there and be giving a webinar as if she's, you know, anywhere, and no one really knows where she is, but she's in Willmar. So her company actually pays our membership so that she can have an office there and have those resources. It allows companies who aren't in our community to provide for their employees a very professional setting with all the amenities that they would have if they were in their office, wherever that may be. The last example is, his name is Carl. He was the lead engineer at one of the manufacturing companies in our community. And he left his job a couple years into WorkUp's history and now has his own company. And he's been through our programming and is very connected to our space. And he is now leading the region in 3D printing technology. So he's kind of making headlines in our community as far as bringing that kind of technology and expertise to our area right in Spicer. So he's been a huge asset and a real great success story for our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I also have Representative Baker with me today.
Welcome to your old committee.
Yeah,
thank some you, form Chair. Or another it is thank now.
You. Thank you. Good morning, members. And I just wanted to say how much I
Could
appreciate.
Could you identify yourself for the
I'm
speech,
sorry. I should know that, Mr. Chair. Representative Dave Baker. From the great area of Kanawha County in Willmar, Spicer, New London. And as Betsy has mentioned, she's not only a good friend, but also we have worked on many projects together. This space is something like we've never seen in rural Minnesota before, but when it first opened a few years back, it was real cutting edge for rural Minnesota. We've had a lot of meetings there. I have seen people, they've got these workspaces all over, and they're in and out of there 24/7. The coffee pot's always on. It is such a collaborative space. In fact, I recently led a playground concept in Willmar. It's a destination playground, and we actually put a book together because we raised $1 million in private funding, no tax dollars. And we built this amazing all-inclusive playground for our kids. And we had all the diversity in Willmar in that room. We had Somalis. We had Hispanics. We had everybody that was part of this team was in that space and were able to see this for the first time. But that was our hub. That was where we did all of our work and until we actually were building the playground together. So this is an amazing space. There's pictures of it, and if you want to see the book of WorkUp as well, I just want to thank Representative Robbins for this, because we need more of these in smaller communities in rural Minnesota, so that when spouses or significant others want to go to these areas, there's actually a working place that they can feel really proud to go to, and this space would be a perfect model to use after this. So I just want to thank, and I'm proud to be a co-author as well as you, Mr. Chair, on this bill. So thank you very much for letting me speak to this.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? I have a whole slew of them, so stay. This is a $50,000 grant. There's no specific as to the number of grants that can be made. But my question is, what was the cost? And this is to Betsy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite catch the last name, Border?
Bonneman.
What was the startup cost to your particular workspace?
Thank you for the question. It's interesting that it's for $50,000 because I actually borrowed within the first year $50,000. I used that money for things like desks and furniture and flat screen TVs and some of the infrastructure of our space. Of course, there was more involved in terms of, you know, cash flow and that sort of thing. I had good support from my bank. And I also had really good support from the owners of the property. So I'm on the Midwest Technology Campus, and so I was able to negotiate a remodel cost into my lease, which allowed me to have less upfront costs so that I could get started and have a runway, and that really helped me too. So it has a lot to do with what kind of space and what kind of collaboration you can get to get into the space, I would say.
Did I understand you correctly? You have 60 different companies that you connect with through your workspace?
Right now I have, I'll give you the actual numbers, probably 35 individual members, meaning those could be remote workers, freelancers, consultants. We have 7 regular corporate members that use our space, but we have a startup program that is based on programming. It's a special boot camp around some marketing, and we keep in regular contact with that community and have future programming for them. And we've put, after next month, it'll be 50 companies through that program. And those companies remain in our network and in our community and often attend events or become speakers. So there's kind of two aspects. There's the people who need the space, and then there's the people who need the community. And then there's a lot of people who need both.
What is the bandwidth that you provide at this space?
In terms of internet?
Yes.
Yeah. Right now, 100 meg is what we're offering, and that's been adequate. We have access to more, especially because there's infrastructure within the campus to tap into their internet. And so far, we've been able to really provide what was needed for our members. Haven't had any problem with that.
So you have the opportunity to up the service.
Yeah.
Because I suspect in the near future, 100 meg will be like dial-up used to be.
Yes, right. And we're getting there. And we've started looking at it. We'll be ready when it's time to turn the switch on for that. And it's just a matter of managing costs. But right now, it's adequate for us. But we're realizing that that's why we're here, so we need to be ready to increase that.
All right. Are there any other questions? I will tell you that I'm glad you picked up on an idea that I freewheeled through committee. It's always good to be creative and ready to move on something. I like this idea. I'm going to try my hardest to try to figure out if we can figure out some general funds once I stop crying on Friday. So I will, I'll let you renew your motion for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your support and encouragement to bring this bill forward. I really do appreciate that. So, Mr. Chair and members, I move that House File 2419 be laid over for inclusion in the possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
The only thing I would have liked to have is have you bring it to the House floor so you could, you know, stand for the freshman hazing on a bill that you can't really be too mad at, although I will be talking with the broadband guy a little later. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Do we have anything else in before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned.